From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. When you take a walk, how do you feel? Do you find yourself falling into a steady, peaceful rhythm? Do you think more clearly? Does everything slow down? Well, Erling Kagge says, quote, walking expands time rather than collapses it. And he should know, the Norwegian explorer has walked to the ends of the earth. He is the first person to have completed the Three Poles Challenge on foot, meaning he traversed to the North Pole, the South Pole, and the summit of Mount Everest on foot. But he's found meaning also in shorter, less frigid walks, too. And in a new book about walking, he reflects on the art and meaning of putting one foot in front of the other. So this hour on Point, walking with Erling Kagge. And you can join us. Why do you walk? Where have you walked? And whether it's moving on foot or with some assistance, because of course bodies can move through this world in many different ways, why does it feel special to travel in this way, not in a car or a plane or a train, but just you, slowly, and the world? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And joining us today from New York is Erling Kagge. His new book is called Walking, One Step at a Time. We have an excerpt of it at our website, onpointradio.org. Erling Kagge, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you. Thank you.
So let me first ask you, you're in New York today, so I can't see you because I'm in Boston, but did you walk to the studio?
I've actually walked most of the way, yes.
Oh, you did? Okay. How far was your walk today to the studio?
I guess maybe a mile and a half. And, you know, it's New York is very much a walking city. It's a beautiful thing to do.
A mile and a half seems rather short for you, though.
Compared to my longest walks, for sure. But I think, you know, even half a mile is so much better than none. No walking. So I was happy.
And what about today's mile and a half walk in New York City made you happy? What did you see, and what was your state of mind?
I saw lots of construction work. Unbelievable many cars, quite a few people being kind of stressed, you know, to go walk back and forth from something I don't know what was. But, you know, you can't expect anything kind of fantastic to happen if you just walk for a mile in New York. But it's always something that is happening, and, you know, small details, and it's great for people watching. And it's also kind of cleared up my mind before I was going to talk to you. So I kind of got relaxed and it's good for my mood. I like, you know, say in English that you move and you're being moved. Yeah. And you have an emotion and you have an emotion.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was great for me.
Well, the reason why I'm asking is because, of course, you're very famed for walking extraordinary distances in extraordinary circumstances, right? We talked about the North and South Pole, the summit of Everest. But in your book, really what you're talking about in terms of sort of the art and meaning of walking is even if we just take a few steps outside our front door down to get, I don't know, a bottle of milk, that you seem to say in this day and age is a profound act. Why is that?
I think it is, actually. And I think, you know, so much in our lives is about high speed. And of course, the government would like you to speed up throughout the day. The educational system would like you to speed up. And, of course, businesses would like you to speed up. And eventually, I got three daughters, and as soon as they learn how to walk, soon after they learn how to speak. And one of the first questions were, why do we have to walk when it's faster to drive? And that's a very difficult question to answer. And that's also why I sat down to write a book. But my experience is that although if you just walk out to your house and buy the milk by walking 5 minutes back and forth, it makes your life a little bit better. There's no big changes, but a little bit better than if you don't do it.
Yeah. Well, so when your daughters do ask you that question about why should we walk when we can drive, I mean, how do you answer them?
You know, my parents told me the same, and I grew up in the 70s in Norway, and then at that time we listened to our parents. But of course today, the daughters in Norway, they don't listen to their fathers. So, you know, that was a struggle. And I can even tell now my kids are 16, 19, and 22. And the two are 19 and 22, they started walking. But of course, the 16-year-old girl, you know, she still can't see any value at least very little value in walking. So I think it comes a little bit with age too.
I think maybe it's just their act of rebellion against their father, who's made his global career out of
which
walking.
Is a good idea.
So I want to, you know, full disclosure here. I, as I mentioned at the very, very top of the program, at the top of the hour, I am a obsessive walker because I don't own a car, and I fortunately live close enough to where I work that I get to walk every single day. And it's and in the process of reading your book, Erling, it suddenly occurred to me that I value that time so much. And for me, it's, you know, basically between a 10 and 15 minute walk either way. I value that time so much every day that I have fashioned my entire life around it, where I choose to live, where I choose to shop, the places I go. They are largely determined, not every day, but on average, by where I can get to with my feet. It's that powerful. So what do you think is happening to us? Why do you think this particular mode of slow transportation is so moving, as you said?
I think it's beautiful to listen to you. I think it's many reasons. And I think, you know, it ends up like to walk today is some of the most radical thing you can do because it's so contrary to the ideals in society. And I think it's also important to keep in mind that it was walking that made Homo sapiens, that for 200,000 years, where we had Homo sapiens on Earth, we have always been walking. So that's kind of the most basic things we do in life. But and of course, if you look through history, like everyone from Socrates to Steve Jobs, they just kept on walking. And of course, the reason they did it was because made them good. They made them feel better. And it was also very good for their mind.
Yeah. Well, I hope you might be able to give our listeners a taste of, basically, it seems your book strikes me as a meditation on walking. And could you read a little bit from relatively early in the book about how you think walking changes or has changed your concept of time itself?
I would be happy to. Everything moves more slowly when I walk. The world seems softer, and for a short while, I'm not doing household chores, having meetings or reading manuscripts. A free man possesses time. The opinions, expectations, and moods of family, colleagues, and friends all become unimportant for a few minutes or a few hours. Walking, I become the center of my own life, completely forgetting myself shortly afterwards. It is a truth universally acknowledged that one saves time traveling only 2 hours from one point to another instead of spending 8 hours on the same journey. While this holds up mathematically, my experience is the opposite. Time passes more quickly when I increase the speed of travel. My speed and time accelerate in parallel. It is as if the duration of a single hour becomes less than a clock hour. When I am in a rush, I hardly pay attention to anything at all. And this is precisely the secret held by all those who go by foot. Life is prolonged when you walk. Walking expands time rather than collapses it.
That's Erling Kagge reading from his new book, Walking One Step at a Time. Do you experience that time slows down and you are able to remember more, observe more when you're on foot?
Absolutely. But, you know, quite often when I walk, I don't think too much in the sense that when you think about the past or you think about the future, I just walk and it's kind of a meditation without using any techniques. But every now and then, as I say, you know, when you slow down somehow, you're thinking better, you come up with ideas, you find answers to questions you didn't know you had asked yourself. And something also with the emotions, when you slow down, you feel much more. And mm-hmm. I also think it has to do with intelligence, that like if you speed up, it's hard to think. But when you slow down, your brain works better too, if you wanted to.
I wonder if by walking we're sort of answering what's a sort of fundamental animal truth about ourselves as humans, because we are living in an age where we're being hit by so much information all the time. As you said, we're living very fast, but perhaps absorbing very little. And by virtue of walking, we're sort of answering the physical constraints of who we are, right? As organisms. And that is actually a more productive and comfortable space for our minds to be in. Because I feel exactly the same way when I walk around. All of a sudden, if there's a problem that I'm thinking about in my head that I couldn't unlock, when I walk, the problem seems to solve itself.
Exactly. You say you can't walk away from problems. Of course you can. And, sometimes when you return back home or to the office, the problem is still there. But I think quite often also this problem is being solved while you're walking. And maybe it was not, that big problem after all. So I think, in terms of health benefits, walking is fantastic. It's good for your mind. It's your blood pressure goes down, your heart beats better, you breathe better, and you sleep better. But that's, of course, is only half the truth. And somehow, I think the other half is even more fascinating.
Yeah. One of my favorite essays on walking came from Henry David Thoreau, right, who wrote, "This is the secret of the successful sauntering. He who sits still in the house all the time may be the greatest vagrant of all, but the saunterer, in the good sense, is no more a vagrant than a meandering river." We're talking this hour with Erling Kagge. He is a Norwegian explorer, lawyer, art collector, and author, and his latest book is Walking, One Step at a Time, and we want to hear from you about your joys of taking a walk. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Erling Kagge. He's the author of the new book, Walking, One Step at a Time. He's a Norwegian explorer, lawyer, art collector, and author, and the first person to have completed the Three Poles Challenge on foot. That means he walked to the North Pole, the South Pole, and the summit of Mount Everest. And he's joining us this hour to talk about the physical, the emotional, the mental, even the spiritual joys of taking a walk. And Erling, lots of people are responding to what you've already said. So let me just go to our calls very quickly. Joe is calling from Magnolia, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, thank you for this topic. Thanks for taking my call. I was supposed to go for a walk this morning when I first got up, but I didn't think I had time. And now I'm going about my crazy busy day, doing laundry, doing this, and that, and thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to go take a walk and grab a cup of coffee in the beautiful village of Magnolia, Massachusetts, which is part of Gloucester. And one comment about walking is that when we drive, yes, we see only a certain amount. When we bike, we see a little bit more. When we run, we see a little bit more. But when we walk, we see virtually everything. Mm-hmm. And especially to experience it without anything in our ears. No earbuds. I'm going to go without my phone. I never wear earbuds. I think it's very important to experience the world around us. And obviously to be safe and right. To hear things coming at us.
Thank you. Joe, don't go away yet, because I just want to ask you one thing. I really hear what you're saying about when we walk, we see everything. But sometimes I find myself flipping over to the opposite extreme, that because I'm walking and my mind is actually so free to think through things, I actually miss everything around me visually, because I'm like,
do you end up daydreaming, yeah, and thinking about that other stuff because you're in that zone.
Yes.
Yeah. I understand. Yeah.
But I agree, because I mean it's not a formula. Sometimes, you know, I think, you know, we see a lot, and other times you're just totally centered in your own world, living through yourself. So I think that's kind of the beauty of walking. It's kind of everything.
Right. Well, Joe, thank you so much for your call. Go take that walk, Joe. And I mean that in the nicest way possible. Erling, I do want to ask you, I mean, we'll talk more about sort of how all of us, what the benefits are of moving in whatever way, whether it's on our own 2 feet or with some assistance. But I want to ask you, because you have such unique experiences walking in extreme environments. So when you were walking, say, to the Southern Pole, tell us what that was like. What was your state of mind? What did you observe? What did you experience that you would not have experienced if you were doing it on snowmobile?
I walked for 50 days and nights under the midnight sun towards the pole and didn't have any radio contact. And what was very interesting was because when I started out, I felt that everything was white and flat all the way to the horizon. But as the days and weeks passed by, I started to see that it was not that white either, because it was variations of white. It was a bit bluish, reddish, greenish on the surface. And it was not totally flat either. You had, you know, different small structures on the ice and the snow. So in that sense, while relationship to the environment developed, and for a while I believed Antarctica was changing, but of course I was wrong. It was me who was changing. And somehow, eventually, it feels like your body doesn't stop by your fingertips or on your skin, but it kind of extended into nature. And you can start to have a dialogue with the environment, and not with words, but you can send some ideas out and get some other thoughts back again. And so that's an extremely, you know, rich feeling. It's kind of, you know, totally, totally sublime. And I think, you know, these experiences, you know, on silence and on walking combined with, you know, raising 3 kids and having a busy job, maybe made also able for me to, you know, write something about walking, which was a bit original, because these experiences, they are extraordinary.
It sounds like you experienced, I don't know, a stripping away of the self.
Yeah, in one way, yes. But still, you know, it's very much about travel. You know, for me, it was obviously a walk, long walk to a geographical point. But eventually, it's all about, you know, finding your own self-poles in life.
Uh-huh. Now, do you think you had that experience because, I'm sure it's not one thing or the other, but this was, you know, in a very extreme environment, solitude and the walking. I mean, did it take all three of those things in combination for you to, as you say, begin to feel that the ends of yourself wasn't at your fingertips, but rather in the Antarctic all around you?
I think, you know, somehow I think you'd get the same feeling, although, you know, if you just go in the mountains here in the States, wherever, for a day or two. But being for such a long time, you know, it's so much stronger. So that's a big difference, that it feels so much, you know, it feels so extreme. And you can always wonder if, you know, it's something special with me that could do this, but I don't think so. I think, you know, the most special thing was that I actually tried. And in one sense, you know, to walk to the South Pole is like any other walk. You need to put one step in front of the other enough times, and then you get there. Like we say in Norway, we say that even a mouse can eat an elephant if you take small portions.
You know, fundamentally, I understand what you mean, but I would say that a walk to the South Pole is not necessarily like any other walk. Perhaps it takes a lot more endurance and preparation than if I just decided to go something like 10 to 15 miles down the road. Let's go back to our callers here. Let's go to Eddie, who's calling from New Orleans. Eddie, you're on the air.
Thank you. My wife and I recently were wanting to relocate to finish our life and work, and one of the key variables in looking at a place was what has good walking ability around the city. Uh-huh. So it was a key thought in our decision-making. And what we've experienced over the years is just all of our senses are more alive when we're working, and two, we have a greater opportunity to kind of meet our neighbors, to see who else is out, to wave. So it's both personal and interactional.
Yeah. Eddie, thank you so much for your call, for your observation. Erling Kago, would you like to respond to what Eddie said?
Yeah, I think, you know, what Eddie says is, you know, what we all kind of experience if we're willing to walk and, you know, not live through, not being part of all this, you know, high speed all the time. I think it's like when I look around, it's, you know, people are usually focused on some screens, looking down towards a screen all the time, even when they walk, and of course that limits life dramatically. And also your senses, you know, you hardly need your senses anymore because you don't look up. But as Eddie says, if you walk around and look around and opening up to the world, you're going to love it so much more.
So it's not just enough to take a walk and listen to your favorite podcast, you're saying?
You know, it's nothing wrong with it. You know, this is not a religion. But, you know, for me, the great thing is to walk without holding anything in your hands. Like Eddie said, that you can actually, you know, become a part of the world and feel how the, you know, the world expands around you. If you look down onto a screen, somehow, you know, the whole world narrows in and becomes very, very limited. And, of course, that's also one of the reasons so many people say they feel so unhappy today and sad and lonely is because they don't look up.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell if it's my advancing age or modernity or a little bit of both, but I increasingly find myself when I, you know, take these walks to want to completely unencumber myself and not even carry a backpack anymore. Just really just be out in the world with a jacket basically to keep me warm. I mean, is there something to that, or is it just I'm just getting old?
it's certainly something for the first half of what you said. I think, you know, it's as I said, sometimes it comes with age. Like my 16-year-old daughter, you know, she would like to move fast from place to place, or she would like to be available at all times. But I think, you know, it's soon, like we see my two other daughters, you know, when they turn around 20, you know, they start to see life differently, and they start to understand that they have this huge opportunity to live a rich life. And then you have to be kind of centered in your own life. And as I said, it's not about turning you back to the world. It's not about living a more egocentric life. It's about the opposite. It's about, you know, seeing the world from new angles, and it's about seeing people, and it's about loving the earth even more.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Susan, who's calling from Northampton, Massachusetts. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a neuroscientist, and this year I'm doing a research fellowship on forests and brain health at Harvard Forest as a collaboration with Harvard Medical School. So I just wanted to emphasize the additional benefits of walking in nature, and especially being able to visit a place over and over again like a friend, and emphasize that the benefits are also found even if you're in a wheelchair. And are especially important for special populations like veterans and teens. And I think this is an important public health benefit of our public land as we become more and more, a higher percentage of our population is living in the city. That's associated with rates of mental illness like schizophrenia and depression. So our natural public land and conservation land really has a very important brain health and public health role to play.
Yeah. Susan, I hear what you're saying, and three really important points there. I have to say about our built environments in urban environments, that's such a tragedy that we haven't actually, in modern times, created environments that facilitate walking, right? Because it's all been built around the needs of the automobile. But Susan, thank you so much for your call. Erling, let me ask you, Susan was talking about the real health benefits as well of walking. And you, in fact, open your book with the story of your grandmother, right? Who, after her knees stopped functioning and she became bedridden?
Yeah. I was very fond of my grandmother. And she was a keen walker. She had to walk because she grew up at a time when people didn't have cars in Norway. But one day she didn't manage to get up from the chair, and she lay down in a bed, and she kind of never really got up again. And I think that was the day she died. She lived on for a few more months, but, you know, it was like she was dead. And at the same time, my daughter number two, she started to learn how to walk. So it was a very strange experience to see how one person was just, you know, leaving us, and the other one is just opening up. And I could see, you know, how she and every kid is kind of born an explorer. So all she wanted to do was to get up on two legs, walk across the sitting room, out through the door, and experience the world. And she was wondering what was hidden behind the horizon. So that was a beautiful feeling to see, but also, of course, very sad to see how what happened to my grandmother when she was not able to walk at all.
Now, Erling, our previous caller also mentioned that, you know, we shouldn't limit the idea of walking to those who can move on their own two feet, right? She talked about how moving through the world for people in the disability community, whether it's through assistance or wheelchairs, that the benefits are the same. And you talk about that in your book as well, that you have a good friend who moves about with a wheelchair. And what did you learn from him?
I think, you know, that's, you know, Susan's point is very interesting, because exactly when I started writing the book, I thought, you know, maybe you actually have to stand up on two legs and walk like most people are doing. But my friend who's sitting in a wheelchair, he said that, you know, eventually he got the same feeling sitting in his wheelchair driving around Oslo. Of course, it's slightly different, but, you know, it's also have many, many similarities, which I found very interesting.
And what were the similarities that you found?
Similarities is this again, that, you know, he's experiencing the world in a physical way. He's moving around. He can, you know, feel with his fingers, with his arms. He can touch things, and he sees things. What's happening with his own eyes? And again, you know, being to move, and he's being moved, motion, emotion. And you know, in a classical sense, that he's exploring the world in a physical sense, while when I look at many people today, they don't. They sit inside in a chair and explore the world through a screen. And of course, that's extremely limiting.
Right. You know, the other thing about that walking does, we've been talking about how much it frees the self, right? I mean, that to engage with our environment or our own thoughts in what's becoming an increasingly rare way. But it also allows us to engage with other members of our community. And I'm just thinking a very simple example. For years and years, we had a big, beautiful, lovely dog. So, of course, we had to walk our dog every day. And because of that, we know everyone in our neighborhood. We are members of our community now because we were out there on foot walking our dog. And, it, you know, now that he's passed away, we're actually not out there as much as we once were. So it's a means. Walking is a means of engaging with the very people who live around you as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, it's both in terms of your neighborhood, but I also think it has a huge democratic value.
Yes.
That people actually see each other in society. And I think it's a bit frightening today that also when you see so many people in power, that they actually don't see the people, you know, they're influencing. And so I think, you know, also, you know, it's the world is getting a better place to be also, you know, when people see each other at street level. But, you know, having said that, with limitations of walking, etc., together with two friends once, I walked through most of L.A. from east, way east in the city towards the ocean. Mm-hmm. And because everybody says you can't walk in L.A., and, of course, everybody see in L.A. see the city and see their fellow citizens through car windows. But we walked through the whole city for 4 days and, you know, saw the same as everybody else, but we saw it in slow motion and we didn't see it through a window, but we saw it, you know, from the curb of the road or the pavement. And that was, you know, that gave us, you know, such, you know, different experience of the whole city and people living there.
Did people give you strange looks, though, that you were walking in LA?
You know, exactly. You know, way east, where it's kind of, you know, crime rate is high, we were actually stopped by the police, and because, you know, it's mostly insane people or prostitutes or junkies who walks long distances. And he was suspicious. He was wondering what we were doing walking through the city. And we told him, and, you know, then he became very friendly. But it was kind of strange to be stopped by the police for walking.
Doesn't that say so much, though, that it's considered to be an potentially abnormal behavior, just walking around in a city, about our attitudes of of what it means to just walk. But Erling, I love this idea of walking being a very democratizing force. It's also a rebellious one, right? Protests are always done by people walking down the street en masse, or Gandhi in the liberation of India when he wanted to walk with Indians to the sea in order to make salt. You couldn't have done that by saying we're going to take cars or a rickshaw. It wouldn't have had the same impact. But we have to take another break here. So Erling Kaga, just hang on for a minute. His new book is Walking One Step at a Time. And we want to hear from you. What are the transformational or even the spiritual aspects of moving about in the world under your own power? We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Smart journalism. Fascinating topics. Words that describe CNN's podcast, The Assignment with Audie Cornish.
Last year, the Army missed its recruitment goal. It had 65,000 spots to fill and came up 10,000 short of that target. Why is it so hard to recruit? How's the Pentagon responding? And how are the voices of service members on social media shifting the balance?
Listen to The Assignment with Audie Cornish wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Erling Kaga. He's a Norwegian explorer and author of the new book, Walking, One Step at a Time. Erling, we've got several comments that have come in online as well. Listener Nstef says that walking is a meditation where all the loose strings, obsessions, thoughts, memories, etc. fall away, and the sensory experience of what you're moving through becomes the reality. And Steph says it's like a temporary vacation from your brain. Listener Brian Gadry? Sorry, Brian, if I said your name incorrectly. Brian tells us the story about a couple of years ago, his car died, so he started taking public transportation and walking to work. And here's what he says. Brian says, I noticed slight changes from day to day in temperature, in how much lighter or darker it was outside. I started to notice which flowers and trees were in bloom and which birds were migrating through the area. And of course, Brian got to meet his neighbors and he felt healthier. And then his car got fixed and he started to miss all that. He felt smaller and more isolated being back in his car. So some reflections there from some of our listeners, Erling. Let's go back to the phones. Elaine is calling from Sugar Grove, North Carolina. Elaine, you're on the air.
Hi, Megan. I can tell you that I've experienced so many of the same feelings that so many of your callers and your your guests have said. We took a 45-day walk across Spain on the Camino de Santiago. It's about 500 miles. And there were days when it was complete meditation. We would spend hours and hours not talking, just enjoying the environment. And other days we would stop. We wouldn't stop talking. It would be chatting with all of the other pilgrims because it was originally a pilgrimage route. So many of the things I learned is that there are so many different ways that you can walk the Camino. Any way is right, the right way. Whether it's in complete silence, which we heard some people do, or just for the physical adventure and challenge. It was a very profound and moving experience.
Yeah.
It was a physical challenge more for me. My husband walked like a day in the park, and for me it was more challenging because my body didn't cooperate as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned that I can do it. I mean, I look back on it and I thought, if I can do the Camino, I can do anything.
Yeah.
So,
Elaine, can I just ask you a quick question? I mean, the Camino de Santiago is a legendary pilgrimage, right?
Yeah.
For centuries.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'd love to do someday. Do you think you would have had that same profound experience if you had done it in any other way than walking the Camino de Santiago?
No.
Yeah.
I saw people do it on bicycles. I saw them on horseback. I don't think it's the same. You just don't connect with your environment. You don't connect with the people. And you don't have time to take it all in.
Right. Elaine, thank you so much for your call. Erling, there are actually, I mean, in the world of faith, there are so many pilgrimages that are walking pilgrimages, right? Regardless of the religion, you can think of one. I mean, the Hajj, for example. Fundamentally, it's a walking pilgrimage in Mecca. So, I mean, is there something profoundly spiritual, uniquely spiritual about traveling by foot?
Yes, it certainly doesn't have to be. Like when I walk to my office in the morning, it's very little spiritual, dimensions. But certainly, yes. And that's some of the beauty with walking. It could be that. It could be also, just a means of transportation from A to B. But it certainly has a spiritual side. And as I also said, it's in all religions they walk. And I think, it's things that have lasted for thousands of years, we should really take seriously.
Hmm. Well, let's go to Penny, who's calling from Pawleys Island, South Carolina. Penny, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you about my daughter, Jessica Grebe. She has been in recovery for 5 years. And last July, she started walking from Fort Kent, Maine, the Canadian border. And she's now in Florida, and she's making her way to Key West. And she's doing it to raise awareness for the opioid epidemic, but I've seen more growth in her. She's been in and out of treatment for 4 years now, and I can't believe the difference that this walk has made spiritually, physically, mentally. The growth in her is amazing.
Wow.
And I don't think she could have done this if she hadn't started walking. And the people she's met, the kindness, whereas before there was so much stigma to what she was going through. Now she has thousands of followers, and she's seeing kindness everywhere she goes, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah,
just from walking.
Penny, I have so many questions for you. Why did your daughter decide to do it this way?
Well, she had met through. I belonged to a support group that was helping a gentleman who was doing the same thing. Brett Bremble started the East Coast Overdose Awareness Walk. I put him up because we lost my son. She lost her brother. And I put him up in Pawleys Island when he came through. And then we saw him again in Maine. And when she was up in Maine, she was really at rock bottom. I mean, mm-hmm. really bad. And she had met Brett in Pawleys, and Brett said, you know what? What do you think? Would you want to do this? And she walked the last 300 miles of his trip in Maine. And she turned around and said, you know what? I want to take this and go back.
Wow.
And she did. And I can't even tell you the difference that I see in her every day. The girl I never thought I would see again, I have back because she started walking.
Penny, how long has it taken your daughter to do this?
She will finish on June 15th in Key West, Florida. And she started, I want to say July, 28th. So a little under a year.
Wow, good for her.
Yeah, and it's and you know what? She's a beacon of hope now for so many people in recovery. That's the other thing that she puts out there every day. If I can do this, we can do anything, and you can recover.
Penny,
so.
Oh, wow. This is such a tremendous story. Penny, thank you so much for your call. And also, next time you talk to your daughter, tell her that everyone at On Point is pulling for her as she finishes her
Me
journey.
Too. Me too.
Penny, thank you for your call. Erling, I think there are so many stories, perhaps not to the extent that Penny's daughter has undertaken, but people who go who say, I need to undergo a transformation, and they do it by walking. I mean, I know bunches of people who've done in the United States, the Pacific Crest Trail, for example, or the Appalachian Trail, because being out there, body and mind, through walking long, long distances is the only way they feel that they can emerge to this new person that they wish to be. Why is that?
I think it's just a deep need we have to get away and being present in our own lives and seeing things, take things in. and, you know, get to know ourselves, because some of the meanings of life, of course, is to get to know yourself. And the way we're living now, we are forgetting ourselves. So then we're losing out on a very important dimension. And, you know, most people I talk to, they say that life is so short. And of course, life is short if you do the same every day. But if you walk and experience different things, or maybe walk for long distance, life suddenly feels very long and beautiful.
I also think that it's because it can be hard. That it's because it's hard, and because it can be a test, right? Especially if you're going far. That perhaps we can't really know who we are to become without testing ourselves.
Exactly. And I think, you know, it can be hard, but I think, you know, it's throughout the day you make all the choices, you know, if you're going to have the easiest option or most difficult option. And I think quite often we need to choose the little bit more difficult option than the easiest one, because that's what makes life worth living. And of course, the walk is slightly more difficult than taking the metro or the car. But, you know, if you always go for the easiest option, life becomes extremely boring and also, you know, foreseeable. And if you don't have any novelties in your life, again, you know, it's hardly worth living. Yeah. And that's also why you need to walk, because, you know, then new things are happening in your life. And then you're actually expanding time, as you talked about earlier on.
Now, you have chosen some difficult walks and some unusual ones as well. And there's one that I really want to ask you about, because you walked across New York City, but underground through the sewer system. Is that right?
that's almost totally correct. Together with urban explorer Steve Duncan from We actually walked from Northern Bronx into the sewage of Bronx, walked down to Harlem, out of the sewage, and then crisscrossed the city for 5 days, having sleeping bags, sleeping underground. We had to get above the surface to change tunnels, but, you know, mostly stayed underground in sewage, train, subway, and water tunnels through the whole city. And that was, you know, it's just very interesting to see New York City from the inside out and what the city would look like if you turn it upside down. And then again, by walking, we really, you know, saw how everything that's happening above ground is reflected below ground.
How is it reflect? Oh, is in terms of the detritus of the city?
Yeah, but, you know, above ground you have all this consumption, and then, you know, you see the result of it below ground in terms of course, people go to the toilet, but also in terms of garbage, and in terms of, you know, it's one strange example is like, let's say, for instance, they use so much more toilet paper in Soho in New York than they do in Bronx.
Well, I was wondering if you might be able to read a little excerpt from the part of the book where you talk about walking underneath New York City.
I'm happy to. I inched along, my chest and back gliding into the ooze above and below me. My gloves, hat, and jacket were plastered with slime. The distances that we were covering were small, but down in the sewage, time follows another rhythm. Time ceases to matter. This is the same feeling I have experienced on other expeditions, and when I am together with someone who I love very much. In these moments, time seems either to speed up or go very slowly. I stopped, lifted my head, and peered down the tunnel. What was awaiting us farther ahead? For the first time in as long as I could remember, I asked myself, what am I doing here?
That's Erling Kagge reading from his new book, Walking One Step at a Time. Let's go to Alex, who's calling from Lawrence, Massachusetts. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm sorry. I have a comment that when I used to be younger in the Dominican Republic, I used to walk a lot. Mm-hmm. And then when I came here to the United States, you know, it started to diminish little by little. So, you know, by the time I was 32, I had a little bit of issue with the heart. Not like a heart problem, but, you know, I would get like, like little panic attacks here and there. And that's because, you know, my systolic number and my diastolic, whatever you call it, mm-hmm. they were kind of high. So, but I cannot believe it took a Fitbit Ionic that my wife gave me to actually go out and walk. Now I'm kind of like addicted to it. You know, I love going hiking. I love taking long walks. And I'm amazed how people always tell me, you know, how do you do it? And I was like, easy, because I'm a human being just like you.
Yeah.
We could walk all the time, you know. I'm trying to get my kids to do it, but, you know, that's kind of like another adventure to try to, you know, get there and whatnot. And I have a question for your for the guy that is there. Does he have his book in audio by any chance?
A good news for you. I believe it is, yes.
Okay. So maybe, Alex, you might take him along in the audiobook as you take one of your walks. Alex, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Kimberly, who's calling from Tampa, Florida. Kimberly, you're on the air.
Thank you. I love this topic so much. I'm so excited. My dad at age 73, was diagnosed with cancer, and he was such a healthy person, but so be it. And he had already been a walker every day, and I had a different form of exercise. I did high impact aerobics, and he would always invite me. And I guess I didn't really realize until he was diagnosed that this was an opportunity to be with my dad, mm-hmm. you know, a couple times a week. And we have Bayshore Boulevard. It's the longest sidewalk in the world. And inside this bay are dolphins and manatees and stingrays, and it's absolutely beautiful every day. When my dad was diagnosed, they gave him 2 years to live, but he said, I'm going to walk through this. I don't think they're right. I don't think I have cancer. So I said, no, I agree. What are we going to do? And he goes, let's just walk. Hmm. And he lived 8 years.
Wow.
He walked 6 miles every day, and I couldn't keep up with him. I could not walk 6 miles every day. But I have chronic back pain and had back surgery 27 days ago. And the first thing I did when I woke up from surgery was I started walking. And it felt good. It doesn't feel good to not walk. It still hurts to sit.
Yeah.
But walking is my healing.
Yeah.
Walking is my strength. I know it's great to not plug in and all that, but I listen to really great music. I have a playlist, and I kind of dance walk down Bayshore Boulevard. I'm that crazy woman. Yes, I am. It is the joy of my life that I start at 7:30 every yeah. other morning. I start my day that way, and I'm determined to live longer and get right. rid of chronic pain by doing just that.
Well, Kimberly, thank you so much for your call. And you also have those, as you're sort of boogieing down the boardwalk, you've got those memories of your father as well. So what an amazing story. Kimberly, thank you again for calling. Erling, we have maybe 45 seconds left to go here, and I'm not quite sure how to bring this conversation to a close. So I'm just going to ask you, where on planet Earth have you not yet walked that you would like to?
I think, you know, actually most places, I think, you know, although I've, you know, been many places, I think somehow the world remains unexplored in the sense that everything changes all the time, both, you know, what you're going to see and yourself. So to me, most places remain to be explored.
Well, Erling Kagge is a Norwegian explorer, the first person to have completed the Three Poles Challenge on foot, meaning he walked to the North Pole, the South Pole, and the summit of Mount Everest. He's also author of the tremendous new book, Walking, One Step at a Time. We have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. Erling, it's been a great privilege to speak with you this hour. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Megan.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.